Welcome back to the Average to Savage Show with Scaletti, a podcast that will help you overcome your limiting beliefs, setbacks, and fears to create the life you were destined to live. Matt Scaletti here with special guest, my man, one of my really good friends. This is Dylan Dwinell, and Dylan is a real-life Rocky Balboa. He is a savage, and I can attest to that. He's a champion and relentless warrior. He's been knocked down many times, but always gets up stronger. And he recently ran his first marathon with, and I think, a badass time, which we are going to hear about. Dylan, welcome, my man. I'm excited we're doing this. Yeah, I can't wait, man. Let's just like... We were chatting before we started recording. I just want to dive in because I know some of your story, but I don't know all of it. You say, and I know some of it, you've been knocked down many times. Can you just tell us and jump right in some of the things you've dealt with as far as being knocked down in your life and how you're bouncing back?
Absolutely. Yeah, man. Well, it starts at a very young age with parents being split at age 5. Being bullied, some basic things that a lot of people go through. But more recently, the loss of my mother in 2019 to ovarian cancer. She was a super healthy woman, and it was completely out of the blue. She was actually a marathon runner and ate all organic, as healthy as can be. And it was super unfortunate. And then so that happened. COVID happened right after that. And then also recently the loss of one of my best friends, Matt Leith. So, you know, I've definitely taken some hits, but I always bounce back for sure.
I mean, do you mind if I ask you about your mom? I mean, you lost her and then you go right into COVID. How did you cope with it? How did you deal with it? The word is not overcome, because I don't think that probably ever happens, but how did you deal with that shortly after it happened and even now?
Yeah, absolutely. So initially I handled it completely inappropriately, to be honest with you. And that goes for, you know, a lot of us, but I started hitting the booze pretty heavy, to be honest with you, and just kind of numb that pain and didn't deal with it properly. You know, I just hid kind of in a corner, kind of pretended like it never happened, and just did the best I could to go throughout my everyday life. And it was a struggle, man. It was just a huge burden to carry. And I just literally, to the best of my ability, carried it with me. And it wasn't easy, man. It wasn't easy at all.
I mean, I appreciate you sharing. I'm sure not. And I mean, you and I, for those that don't know, Dylan and I definitely connect on the alcohol front. We've both self-medicated, if you want to call it, or over drinking for many years of our lives. Can you share a little bit about your journey and how you've come out of that? I mean, because this is a really inspiring story.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll go back. I'll give you a little context of how I got into alcohol. Essentially, started at a young age, like most people, high school. And I always swore that I would never drink. That was, my dad was an alcoholic and I could not stand it. And I was like, I'm never going to drink. It's just not happening. I'm good. I don't want to be anything like that. And I ended up finally caving and drinking at the age of 17-ish. And I almost looked at it as like, this is the greatest thing ever, because before that, I was a real shy kid and struggled with being insecure. And once I had this alcohol and I tasted this alcohol, I became different. I kind of lit up the room, became more popular, girls liked me. So I thought it was just this great, amazing tool, you know?
Yep.
So I started using it. And like I said, I thought it was great. But then over time, I became reliant on it, and it got so bad that when I wasn't drinking, I needed the alcohol. And that's where I started drinking for the wrong reasons. So yeah, that, in a nutshell, that's kind of where, how that all came about.
No, I mean, I relate to that for sure. It's like you start out just partying and then it becomes something that you need to function at, in a certain level. And that, I mean, I think I'm with you. That's the scary. I got to that scary time as well. How did you know? And we can talk about your sobriety journey too. How did you know it was time, or what was there a moment that was like, I can't take it anymore, I need to stop, and then you make a shift, or how has that been?
Yeah, so probably I'd say it was all good and fun probably into my late 20s, and then hangovers started getting really, a lot worse.
I know.
Like terrible. Like I could always, when I was younger in my 20s, I could always drink hard. Like I remember, like I have stories of I would drink till 4 a.m. and then I would do a Spartan the next morning and crush it, you know?
I mean, I hate to say that's impressive, but I mean,
so like, and I don't think it was quite as noticeable to people and stuff, and I probably didn't realize that I was drinking as much as I was, but I was drinking an insane amount of alcohol on a regular basis, but I was still able to function and at a high level, I would say, up until about 30-ish. And then the hangovers kicked in and just panic attacks and anxiety started to kick in like insane. And then some of these other things started to come up, like, you know, my mom got diagnosed, like I said. And so when I was drinking too, it was causing a lot of, you know, not good emotions.
Yeah.
To reach the surface. And also, and then when the COVID hit too, it was like isolation and it was nothing to do when I was drinking. And then it was like, I didn't really have anything to do the next day and I wasn't really working out. So like my health was declining. And then I was, that would be the only thing that would really make me feel better too, as well. So it became like I was relying on it. And I couldn't do that anymore to where I could get up and just work out and go to work and handle it. You know, I just couldn't do it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And it seems like, and I got to give you a lot of kudos for this because you figured it out quicker than I did. I think it seems like you're doing a great job of surrounding yourself now with people that are on a better path. Like how much of your success has been you just saying, I'm done, that's it. And then how much of it do you think has been who you've been around? And maybe even if you want to throw in there, have you lost some friends that still drink and you just don't want that lifestyle anymore?
Yeah, for sure. So I still have a lot of good friends that drink, but yes, it does take huge sacrifice, man, in the first steps. Absolutely. And it may be, and you may lose friends. Yeah, I've lost friends, but you may be able to keep the friends, but you may need time away from them. And so, yeah, with me, I just decided that I'm not going to be around alcohol. That was the first decision I made, was like, there's no alcohol in the house and I'm not going to hang out with people that drink, or not that they drink, like not in the setting where they're drinking, but I'm just not going to be a part of it for a while. And then, yeah, the Freedom Council with Steve Weatherford I joined a group, an online group called the Freedom Council. That's just surrounded. It's just group of badasses that just literally, they're the people you want to be around. And then I got connected with you through there and we started hanging out and now we have our group. And, you know, those are the type of people I want to be around, man. I want people who are going to push you to, you know, let's do this physical challenge. You know, what are you going to do today? Are you going to sit back and sleep until late? Are you going to get up and get to work, you know? And yeah, it's been life-changing, seriously.
Hey, back at you, my friend. Like for those that don't know, and this is why I love Dylan. Like when we get together, I mean, I'm almost like nervous in the best way because I know you're going to make me go further than I would have gone if I was by myself. And whether that's pace or distance or whatever, or push-ups, whatever it is, I just admire that you seem like when you get around a group like that, it's just, and it's in an encouraging way. It's not like I'm against you. Like, it's like, can we push each other higher and higher? And I admire that. You do a really good job of that, my friend.
Oh, healthy competition is incredible. And that is something that I love, is just competition in general. I always loved sports growing up, and anything could be a card game, you know. I'm going to get could be playing spades, and it's like, I'm going to want to win with everything in it, you know, and everything in me. And it doesn't matter. So I think using that, you know, love for competition in a healthy way has been great for me and can be great for anybody, especially, you know, if it comes to overcoming addiction and things like that. That was a tool that I've definitely used for sure.
That's a really good point. Yeah. Healthy competition. And you seem like you like to compete, I mean, against others as well in a healthy way. And then also against yourself. Like, it seems like you're on, from what I've seen from knowing you for, you know, 6+ months, you're on this mission of, can I beat who I was yesterday, last week, last month? And you've clearly done a hell of a job of it since I've known you. I mean, it's amazing to see the growth.
100%, 100%. I compete every day against the man I was the day before, for sure.
And you're winning, and that guy keeps losing. The guy keeps losing.
Exactly. That should be the number one competition every day, 100%.
I agree. You're a living testimony of that. And for those that don't know Dylan, if you know me and not him yet, you got to check him out, because he's living. It's not just talk. You live it, what you're speaking. And I think that's what I admire most, is your action behind it is the real deal. And I mean, you just proved it. This is a perfect lead-in. You just proved it in running your first marathon, which was, I don't know when this is going to air. It'll be maybe a month or two after you've done it. But can you share with us first off why you even wanted to run a marathon and where it was? And we'll get into the story, because I don't even know all the answers to these. I can't wait to hear about it.
Absolutely. Yeah. So it started with the decision to get sober. And I'd always gotten advice. I kind of battled with getting sober and staying sober. And a great piece of advice I got was that you need to find something that you want more than the drink.
Oh.
And I guess I never was able to truly, truly find that. I had great motivation, and I almost feel like bad. Like, I have a wonderful family, you know, like that should be enough in itself. But for whatever reason, it just didn't give me that full 100% commitment. But so when I decided to lay down the alcohol, I had this vision of running, and specifically running, it started off with a half marathon. So I got sober and I immediately signed up for a half marathon, and it was in 2.5 weeks. So I was like, this will help. this will help.
I love it. I love how you go all in. You're just like, all in.
I just know that that's the way I am, that I'm an extreme person. So it's like, I'm not going to just, and maybe for other people, it's not that extreme, but for me, it's like, I'm going from a heavy drinker and I'm going to run a half marathon in 2.5 weeks. Like, that's just the way it's going to be.
Well, you know,
I need something extreme to replace it with, you know?
Yeah. And I don't want to cut you off, but I think that's like a huge point, that to me is you knowing you, and that's just how you operate. Like, and I think that's why you and I vibe, but to your point, that's a great point. Somebody could be listening to this and they don't want to go run a half marathon. Maybe they're walking a mile, but that's them versus them. And I just appreciate
exactly. That's their equivalent of me running that half marathon. Exactly. Yeah. So I decided I was going to attack that half marathon, and just the 2 weeks of training that I did, I just fell in love with the process immediately. It didn't take me long at all. And I was like, I'm a big believer in God, and I feel in Jesus Christ. And I felt like he gave me a gift of running. Like, he put this in my life to replace the alcohol. So in this two and a half week time of training and then running the half marathon, like, I would get this euphoric feeling while running. Like I mean, like that runner's high you get, the endorphin release, dopamine release. It was like, this is better than drinking, you know? And I want more of that. Like I want more, you know, I kind of became hooked on running. And I mean, I've always been an exercise guy, you know, I've always, like I said before, I could work out, but I never really experienced the benefits of it because of different factors, you know, but so to keep going along with the story, I run the half marathon and I pull it out in 2 hours and 1 minute at like 210 pounds. And it was pretty, like, for me, like, I was pretty, like, that's pretty good, I think.
That's, I mean, you get
like
anywhere.
Just over a 9 minute pace for half marathon, which is good in that time, I think.
Very good.
And
that's
it was
very
like, good. So I was like, wait a minute, like, I need to set like a bigger goal with running, you know?
Yep.
So after that, I was like, I love this and this is going to help me stay sober. So I'm going to set a goal, a big goal of a 330 marathon for the Montreal marathon, which was, it was about 4.5-5 months after that.
So the Montreal full marathon was about 5 months after the half marathon you ran?
After the half marathon. Okay. So I made this goal of running this in that time. And it was very clear in my head. Like, that's the time you're going to go for. Like, for whatever reason. Like I said, I'm a believer in God. I feel like he put that in my head. That's the time you're going to get, and you're going to get it. And I was willing to do whatever. So I started getting online. I started looking up runners on Instagram, started looking up tips for how we've talked about it, the heart rate training, the zone 2 training, and then doing a speed workout once a week and long runs on the weekend. So I really got into it. Also the nutrition along with it. And I also, to throw it even more, a bigger element to the challenge, I wanted to also keep on my muscle mass and strength. I didn't want to just be running. So I throw that element into it as well.
I mean,
and I actually came across this guy, BPN, oh, yeah. Bear Performance Nutrition, Nick Bear. And he's the one who got me into that, like realizing that you could keep on muscle while training for a marathon and running a crazy pace. So,
and for those that don't know, Dylan definitely has a lot of muscle. In your latest Instagram video, I think that dumbbell is like 400 pounds. I don't know how much that is, but I'm like, oh my God, that thing is enormous. But yeah. I love that. That's an added challenge. Can you keep the muscle on while you're training? So yeah, so walk us through like the training and then getting ready, because I want to hear about the actual run too.
Yeah, exactly. So I knew it was obviously going to take a lot of discipline, a lot of time too as well. So sorry, there something jumped on. So I did something called reverse planning. So I would take my work schedule and time I would be with family, and I would work my training in around that. So it may be one day, it may be I'm running at 5 a.m. and then I'm lifting at home when I have the kids and my wife's at work. Or it may be, you know, that I'm going to put my kids down for a nap after work and I'm going to get on the treadmill and I'm going to do my 6 miles. Or maybe I'm doing it at 9 o'clock at night after everybody's in bed. It just depended, you know?
Yep.
I would basically always do my long runs early in the morning on the weekends. So I would get up usually 4 or 5 a.m., sometimes a little later if I had an easier day on the weekends, and just get it in. Like, it wasn't an option. I was going to do the training. I wouldn't say I was 100% perfect with it, but I was at least 90% of hitting exactly what I had on the training plan throughout the process. I knew that was what it was going to take as well in order to get the goal. So I was getting it done, man.
But I mean, I love all of that. And I remember just asking you leading up to this marathon, when I would ask you a question about it, Dylan has this look like nothing is going to stop me from accomplishing this goal. And I see that look and I just know in my head, it's already a done deal. Like, the way you're looking at me is like, this marathon is in trouble. And I mean, in the best way. So I'm hearing you say there's just no excuses with you once the goal is set. you're going to figure out a way to get there. And I'm sure that, like, when you towed the line in Montreal for the marathon, did that help your confidence, just knowing I'm ready for this thing?
100%. Yeah, 100%. The training, I've never been so confident going into any. I've done several Spartans. I did a couple half marathons. But, yeah, the training 100% made me ready to go. Stepping up there to the start line, I was locked in, and I was so excited for that gun to go off. The energy had me so high too, because I'd been anticipating this now for 5 months, and it was like, I want to prove that I can crush this to what my expectations were, you know, to what God laid on my heart 5 months before.
Yep.
You know, so it was like, I was jacked up, man. I was excited.
Well, I mean, so how did you seem like you did not make a mistake that I've made many times, which is you go out too fast. Like, were you able, when the gun went off, how were you able to make sure you didn't run a 6 minute mile and be like, okay, I exactly. need to, I'm staying.
And I wanted to 100%. I wanted to sprint.
Because sure.
I did the taper. I did so much research. Anytime I could get, any free time I had, I would research, like, and then I would also beforehand, I practiced this stuff with my long runs. So I would take my long runs and I would pretend like it was race day. Same nutrition, same sleep routine, all of it. And then I pretended like I was going up and I was going to do it. You know, even though I was running maybe 18 to 22 miles, it was slightly different. And then there wasn't the same atmosphere. So yeah, man, I was prepared, man. And I was ready to go. But so I knew that I couldn't go out fast. And for me, and maybe a lot of runners out there, I would think it takes your heart a couple miles to come into it. So yeah. my heart rate usually gets up pretty high in the first couple miles. And I knew along, like I said, because I was so excited that would jack my heart rate up a little bit too. So my first couple miles were in the 8, it was like 8:20 and then 8:10, 8:15. And I needed to keep a sub 8 minute pace. So I had to make up for it after the first couple of miles.
But you just knew that you were going to do that coming in.
Yep. I knew I was going to negative split it for sure. I knew I was going to take it easy in the first few miles, ease myself into it, see how I was feeling, and then go from there. And I didn't really know the Montreal course very well, because I just drove straight there and then literally went to bed. I wasn't there for days before or anything, checking stuff out. I drove straight there, slept pretty much, woke up and attacked it, man. And it was pretty hilly, man.
Awesome. Oh,
it was pretty hilly. So, like, the top time was all, I think it was like 2:25 or something. Usually it's like the top runners are running like in the 2:10s, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a tough course, and I read about it before. So, like, the uphill ones, I would go a little slower. But then when it was downhill, I was taking a big advantage of the downhill mileage. I had a few in the middle there that were like in the 7:30s.
Oh, wow. So, you were ripping.
Yeah. So I was crushing it in the middle of the race.
And
what? I didn't.
Oh, go ahead.
I had it in my head too, because I had all the research too. Like, keeping that pace, you're probably going to be feeling it at mile 20, 21, 22. So I wanted to still leave enough in the tank to where I could give my everything. I mean, I was going to do, I mean, my body was literally going to have to shut down at that point, but I was trying to save it to where I didn't have to stop, you know, for those last 3-4 miles.
So what happened the last, like, what happened the last 3, 4, 5 miles? Like, did you ever, you know, like, you hear about the wall, like, and I'm still struggling if that's a real thing or not. I mean, I don't know. I think
running in general and this training and everything I've been through, like I said, in my life, it built mental toughness within me to where I can handle more pain than most, I think. So yeah, it was tough, but I feel like I could compare that, things that I've been through and overcame, even the alcoholism, the death of close ones, COVID, and all these things, you know, even parents being divorced when I was young. I've just been nonstop of overcoming things my whole life, that these physical things for me are not really, like, for a lot of people, I think that would be really difficult. But for me, I try to compare those, like, in that moment of pain coming through your body. Like, and it's not even as bad as a hangover, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm
like
sure.
Trying to get through a day hungover could maybe even be more difficult than those 4 miles of a marathon.
I'm sure you're right. That's a good way to look at it. I mean, it's like,
yeah.
To...
I remember certain days where I was so hungover and like miserable, like trying to get through that day. It's like, if I could get through a whole day that hungover, like I can get through a few miles, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
When I'm extremely healthy right now and I've been putting the right things in my body, like my body is ready for this. I can do this, man.
Yeah.
You know?
I totally agree. And then you ended up finishing. I mean, you basically hit exactly the goal you set, right?
Yeah. So there's, I have these shoes. There's okay, a little story sure. that I'd like to tell. So yeah, I like I said, I had that goal of the 330. I got the vision of that 5 months or so prior to the marathon. And I'm not going to lie and say that every single day I believed it, because there 100% were days where I woke up and I was like, what am I doing? Like, that's too ambitious. Like, I'm not going to be able to do that. Like, I'm 36 years old. Like, I was just not that long ago struggling with alcohol in an extreme way. Like, what am I doing? Like, I can't, it's not possible. Like, it's too much.
Yeah.
But then, so I would battle that with days. And then there'd be days, and I would just push through and I would just be like, I'm just going to get through the training of the day. Like, this, hopefully this will go away. And that did. And then I was struggling with it days leading up to the race. And so the night before I was going to leave, I said, you know what? I'm going to write it on my shoes. I'm going to write 330 on my shoes. And I got it right here. I wrote 330 down. And one of my big motivations for this 330 was my buddy who passed away 6 months before this, Matt Scott Fitzgerald Leith. And the last conversation we had was about running before he passed, through text messaging. And we were talking about our track records from high school. He was a sprinter. And so the speed element I wanted to do in dedication to my buddy Matt, who I had lost. And then the 26.2 here, miles. My mom was a marathon runner. I wanted to do that in a JG Strong, Julie Gus Strong mentality. So I did that. And it was insane. When that gun went off, So there's another part to this story that I don't think I told you. I was debating whether or not to use headphones a lot. Cause I was like, maybe I'll need motivation or whatever. And I'll keep the headphones in and maybe I'll turn it on.
Yeah.
But I lost my headphones the day before. So it was like, I'm not running with headphones. So I was like, this is a sign. This is a sign from God that I'm not running with headphones. I'm just not going to do it. I was like, I could have went out and bought them or whatever, but I'm like, this is a sign. Like, you're not running with headphones. So the gun went off and I just got this crazy like revelation over me. Like, I could feel Matt and my mom with me while I was running in a mighty, mighty powerful way. And it was like, I'm immediately, like after a couple miles, I knew like this was going to happen. I knew the 330 was going to happen. And I was running and it was the most euphoric feeling I think I've ever felt in my life. I could hear their voices cheering me on inside of my head. Clear as day, literally clear as day. They were with me like throughout this run. It was so powerful, man. Like, I haven't heard their voice like that since either one of them passed. They were speaking to me, man. And it was insane because it wasn't like I had to slow up or something to get to 330. Like, I laid it all out. Like, I gave everything that I had in the tank to get to 330. It wasn't like I slowed it down, like, so I would hit this number here. The tank was emptied, and this is the time that it was the result, you know?
Love that.
It was insane, like, because I, about 100 yards before the finish line, too, the 330 pacer came up right next to me. And I was like, this is insane. He came up right next to me and I was like, okay, we did it. And I ran right by him. And I went and I took a video of it. And I went right in front of him and I nailed the three almost to the second. The 330. Like, it was wild.
This is the best.
Yeah, story. Talk about a God story. Like, yes. It was insane.
And all that story too. And to me, what I want to pull out is you saw the headphones thing as a gift. I feel like most people would have been like, I need to go buy another pair of headphones, like you said. And you saw it a completely different way, which allowed you probably to tap into hearing and listening to your mom and your best friend. I mean, that's powerful.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I don't think the music would have been enough motivation, man.
Yeah, and you might
that motivation of them cheering me on. I could hear clear words that they were saying. I can't remember them specifically right now, but I could, like, in their voices, things they would have said, they were speaking to me, and it was just clear. It was insane, man.
I love that. Oh, that's such a great story, and awesome that you nailed. I mean, I feel like you had that 330. I'm not going to say you manifested it, because you partially did, but you worked your butt off to prepare to make sure that it happened, and then to be able to do it. And now it's like, so you, once you cross the finish line and you know the mission's accomplished, I mean, hopefully, I don't know if you stretched afterwards, celebrated, et cetera. Like, then do you think about what's next? Like, do you have something that you want to do in running that I think I know the answer to this.
100%. That's something that I will always do from now on, that I've made up my mind that I need in my life. And that's, I will always have another mountain to climb. I always will. I will always have another physical goal lined up. And I will have it lined up before the next one starts, before the next one finishes. So I'd already had my next goal lined up, which is the 100-mile ultra coming up in 2 months. So that's something I'm going to stick to now is having another physical goal always coming up next. On to the next one.
On to the next one. Find the next mountain. And also, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're thinking about a goal of qualifying for Boston. Is that fair?
Yep. I'm going to. Yes.
You're going to. Yes. You're not thinking about it. It's already a done deal. We just to get to the time. Yeah.
Exactly. I just got to put in the training.
I love this, man.
I'm thinking Pittsburgh, May 5th, 2024.
That's going to be when you qualify?
Yep. Yeah.
I don't see why not. I mean, it seems like you're on a great pace, and I love it, man. And I just want to share too, and I don't even know if you were going to bring this up, but I want to bring it up for you. Like, I know you now coach other people that need help in the health and wellness space. And can you share, and we'll put this in the show notes for the episode as well. How do people find you? What's the best way they can reach out? And we'll share on the show notes too.
Yeah, definitely. So Dil_Dwy80 for Instagram, Facebook, Dylan Dwinell. Those are mainly where you can find me. And you can DM me anything you want to talk about when it comes to the health and wellness. DM me and we can attack that. Figure it out.
I love that you're an open book. And I love that I think you are the perfect person for that word savage. And I think I think to be a savage, you need to be vulnerable. Like, you need to be open and honest about what you've been through and your story. And you do such a good job with that. So yeah, reach out to this guy. I know that you and I have hung out enough times now where I know that what you see is what you're going to get. And this guy, you bring it, man. So congrats.
I can almost guarantee you that if there's any place that you are at that you think is too shameful and that people haven't been there, I can almost guarantee you that I've been there. So I won't judge if you want to talk about any of that stuff.
You know what? That's really well said. I appreciate you sharing that, because I think you not judging then makes me and other people you're around feel like I can say whatever I want, whatever's on my mind or my heart. You set the environment where people feel like they can share and be open. And I appreciate that. Your journey, and it's so cool. And we talk about this a lot, but like, we're just getting started. You're 36, exactly. I'm 40, and this journey's just beginning, and I love that. So
I love that. It just shows the mentality right there, is that you love the journey. Just getting started, yeah, when you said that, that sticks with me, man. Just getting started. Because it shows how much you love the journey, man. It's not always about the destination, man. The journey is the best part of it, you know?
I agree. Just
started is like, yeah.
And when,
I love that.
When we're recording podcasts and I'm 90 and you're 86, we're going to be like, we're still just getting started. We're still.
Exactly. Literally, yeah.
We got a long 100%. Way to go.
100%, long yeah.
I love it, man. I appreciate
the mentality for yeah. life.
It's just a lifestyle. Yeah, that just getting started lifestyle mentality. I just appreciate you. I appreciate your friendship. And seriously, if you're listening or watching, reach out to this guy, follow him on Instagram, shoot him a DM. Much love, my friend. And thanks for hanging out and being willing to share your story. I appreciate you.
Absolutely.
We'll talk soon. And we'll be running and doing crazy stuff very soon.
Oh, I can't wait. Let's get it.
All right, brother. Thanks, everybody, for listening and or watching. We'll see you next week. Thanks for listening. Please subscribe to the podcast and leave a comment if you enjoyed the show. To follow on social media, at Matt Scaletti on Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, and LinkedIn. Feel free to shoot me a message, reach out. I'd love to hear feedback, and wishing you an amazing rest of your week.